singing in the interior of the island, and little else. The water was bright green. Fitch picked up a shell before Letty stepped on it. He said,
"Down on the seashore I found a shell, left by the tide in its noonday swell. Only a white shell out of the sea, yet it bore sweet memories up to me, of a shore where brighter shells are strewn, where I stood in the breakers, but not alone."
"That's lovely," Letty said. They moved on up the shore. It seemed that with every passing second, the sun expanded, its pool of light coloring a distant reef of clouds.
"This is why I chose the Keys, you know," Fitch said. "Best sunsets in the world. Ah, here we are."
They had reached the tip of the island. A pair of Adirondack chairs waited in the sand under the shade of a coconut palm. They faced west, an ice bucket and a small wooden box between them. Letty and Fitch crossed the sand to the chairs. The sunset spread across the horizon like a range of orange mountains. There was no wind, the water as still as glass. Letty glanced down at the box. The top had been stamped. Heidsick and Company, Monopole. Gut American. Vintage 1907. Number 1931. Fitch pulled an unlabeled bottle out of the ice water. He held it to the fading light. The glass was green and scuffed. He went to work opening it. Letty said,
"Special. Even has its own box."
"This bottle was on its way to the Russian royal family when the boat carrying it was torpedoed by Germans. What must have gone through those young sailors' minds? It took a half hour. They knew for a half hour they were going to die and could do nothing to stop it. Nothing but wait and watch the minutes slide."
"In what year?"
"In 1916. The vintage is 1907, which makes this
109 years old?" He nodded. "Oh my God."
"It was recovered from the wreck 18 years ago. The bottles were perfectly preserved at the bottom of the ocean. Notable not only for the rarity and the history, but, as it turns out, the wine itself is quite excellent. I bought one for a special occasion. I'd say tonight qualifies. Would you get the glasses, please?"
Letty reached into the box and lifted out two crystal flutes.
"Go ahead and ask,"
Fitch said as he struggled with the cork.
"Ask what?"
He worked it out so slowly there was no pop, just a short hiss as the pressure released. The cork crumbled in his hand. He held the opening of the bottle to her nose. It smelled like perfume.
"What do you think?"
he asked.
"Gorgeous."
Fitch took a whiff himself and then began to pour.
"So ask,"
he said.
"It won't offend me."
"What?"
"What I paid."
"That would be rude."
"But you want to know."
With her glass full, Letty smelled it again, the carbonation bubbles misting her nose.
"All right. What'd you pay, Johnny?"
$275,000. Here's to you,"
he said. She didn't even know how to comprehend such a figure. "To you, Johnny." They clinked glasses. The champagne was amazing.
"I want to know your passion, Selena."
"My passion?"
"What is it that most excites you in this life? What is your prime mover? Your reason for being here?"
"Prada." This got a huge laugh.
"Money can't buy you happiness, darling. Believe me, I've tried."
"But it affords your own brand of misery."
"You're a lively one, Selena. Let's sit back and enjoy, shall we?"
Fitch said.
"This is going to be a night for the senses."
Letty leaned back in her chair. "That's the prettiest sunset I've ever seen," she said.
"I'm just glad it didn't rain."
Fitch laughed, but there was a sadness in it. All the color went out of the sky.
"Where are you from, Selena?"
Fitch asked. Letty had only had two glasses, but she felt good, too good.
"A little bit of everywhere. I guess I don't really think of any one place as home."
Fitch looked over at her. He patted her hand.
"I know this must be a strange deal for you,"
he said. "It's not."
"You're kind to say that, but..."
He stared out across the sea. With the sun gone, there were only shades of blue.
"I'm just really glad you're here tonight."
They walked toward the house on a sandy path that cut through the heart of the island. Letty held Fitch's hand.
You have a real sweetness about you, Selena,
he said.
Reminds me of my wife.
You miss her? No, I'm sorry, that's not my business.
It's all right, I brought her up. Yeah, I miss her. She left me a year and a half ago.
Before your trial.
Go through something like this, you find out real quick who your friends are. It's not always your kin. Only real loyalty I've seen is from Manuel and my lawyers, both of whom I pay. So what does that tell you? Two of my sons won't speak to me. My youngest only communicates by email. I understand, to a point, I guess. I've put them through a lot. Do you have children, Selena?
I have a son, Letty said, before it even crossed her mind to lie.
Is he in your life?
He's not. Through the underbrush, Letty caught a glimpse of house lights in the distance. Fitch said,
But is there anything he could do that would make you stop loving him?
No.
Anything that would make you willingly abandon him?
Absolutely not.
I suppose our kids don't love us quite like we love them.
I hope that's not true.
I've had my fair share of company over to the island. You're different, Selena.
I hope you mean that in a good way. Fitch stopped. He turned and faced her and pulled her body into his.
I meant it in the best way.
It took her by surprise when he leaned down for a kiss. Not the kiss itself, but the pang of guilt that ripped through her like a razor-tipped arrow. 8. The house was a large gray box set on foundation piers. It had long eaves and wraparound decks on the first and second levels. Extensive latticework enclosed the space under the stairs. Letty spotted rafts and plastic sandcastle molds, snorkeling gear, life jackets, beach toys that she imagined hadn't been touched in years. She and Fitch rinsed the sand off their feet at the bottom of the stairs. Halfway up, Letty could already smell supper cooking. As they walked through the door, Fitch called out,
Smells wonderful, Angie.
Letty followed him into an open living space, hardwood floors, exposed timber beams high above, the walls covered in art deco. A giant marlin had been mounted over the fireplace. A live jazz album whispered in the background. There were candles everywhere. The bulbs in the track lighting shone down softer than starlight. You have a lovely home, Johnny. Letty spotted James and another man walking down a corridor. She and Fitch passed a spiral staircase. They arrived at a granite bar that ran the length of the gourmet kitchen. A stocky woman in a chef coat slid something into a double oven. She wiped her brow off on her sleeve and came over.
Selena, meet Angie,
Fitch said. Hello, Letty said.
Angie is head chef at a Michelin-starred restaurant in Paris. I flew her over to prepare something special for tonight. How's it coming, Angie?
I can bring out starters whenever you're ready. Fitch glanced at Letty.
Hungry?
Starving.
We're ready,
he said. How about wine?
Yes, I think we'd like to have some wine. You decanted everything I showed you?
They're in the cellar, ready to go. What would you like to start with?
Bring out the 1990 Petrus, the 82 Chateau Lafite Rothschild, and the 47 Latour à Pomerol.
Quite a lineup, Angie said.
So much good wine to drink, so little time. We'd like to taste everything side by side, so bring 6 glasses.
You aren't trying to get me drunk, are you? Letty teased, bumping her shoulder into Fitch's arm.
Now why would I need to do that?
They sat at an intimate table in a corner, surrounded by windows. In the candlelight, Fitch looked even younger. Letty dropped her handbag on the floor between her chair and the wall. Angie brought the wine in 3 trips, carrying the empty bottle in one hand and a crystal decanter in the other. All of the Bordeaux was astonishing. With wine like this in the world, Letty didn't know how she could ever go back to $7 bottles of Merlot from the supermarket. They started with a plate of plain white truffles, then foie gras, then scallops. Angie kept bringing more courses. Because Letty was drinking out of 3 glasses, she had difficulty gauging her intake.
She tried to pace herself with small sips, but it was all simply the best thing she'd ever tasted. Over the cheese course, Fitch said,
"It occurs to me there will be many evenings to come when I long to return to this meal."
Letty reached across the table and took hold of his hand. "Let's try to stay in the moment, huh?"
"Sound advice."
"So, Johnny, what is your passion?"
"My passion?"
"For a man who has achieved all the material wants."
"Experience."
His eyes began to tear.
"I want to experience everything."
Angie came over to the table. "How was everything?"
"I'm speechless,"
Fitch said. He rose out of his seat and embraced the chef. Letty heard him whisper,
"I can't thank you enough for this. You're an artist, and the memory of this meal will sustain me for years to come."
"It was my pleasure, Johnny. Dessert will be up in 15.
"We're done here, and we can handle getting dessert for ourselves. Someone will clean up. You've been cooking all day. Why don't you take off?"
"No, let me finish out the service."
"Angie."
Fitch took hold of her arm.
"I insist. Pete's waiting in the yacht to take you back."
For a moment, Letty thought she might resist. Instead, the chef embraced Fitch again, said, "You take care of yourself, Johnny." Fitch watched her cross to the front door. As she opened it, she called out, "Dessert dishes and silverware on the counter beside the oven. Good night, Johnny."
"Night, Angie."
The door slammed after her, and for a moment the house stood absolutely silent. Fitch sat down. He said,
"How strange to know you've just seen a friend for the last time."
He sipped his wine. Letty looked out the window. The moon was rising out of the sea. In its light, she could see the profile of a suited man walking down a path toward the shore.
"It begins to go so fast,"
Fitch said. "What?"
"Time. You cling to every second, savor everything, wish you'd lived all your days like this. Excuse me."
He rose from his seat. Letty watched him shuffle across to the other side of the room and disappear through a door, which he closed after him. She lifted her purse into her lap and tore it open. Her fingers moved with sufficient clumsiness to convince her she'd gotten herself drunk. She grasped the spray bottle. Fitch still had some wine left in two of his glasses. Reaching across the table, she put 5 squirts into the one on the left. The door Fitch had gone through creaked open. He emerged, cradling a bottle in one arm and carrying 2 glasses in the other. He was grinning. From across the room, he held up the bottle, said,
"The jewel of our evening. Come on over here, sugar."
Fitch sat down on a leather sofa. Letty still hadn't moved, her mind scrambling. "I missed my chance. I missed my chance." 9. Fitch waved her over.
"Sit with me."
Letty glanced at her watch as she stood. 7:05. 55 minutes until her rendezvous with Javier at the east end of the island. She grabbed one of her wine glasses and Fitch's. He was already tugging the cork out of the bottle as she walked over. Letty said, "Here you go and leave, and I was just on the verge of making a beautiful toast." She tried to hand Fitch his wine glass.
"We'll toast with this instead,"
he said, showing her the bottle. Macallan, 1926. "Oh, I'm not too much of a Scotch girl."
"I understand, but this is really something. You couldn't not love this."
"Now I'm losing my nerve." She thought she registered a flash of something behind his eyes. Rage? But they quickly softened. Fitch put the bottle down and accepted his glass and stood. Letty had no idea of what to say. She looked up at Fitch and smiled, her mind blank. It came to her in an instant, a toast she'd overheard at a wedding she'd crashed 2 years ago. Back then, she'd spent her Saturdays stealing presents from brides and grooms. She'd developed something akin to an X-ray sense for determining the most expensive gifts based solely on wrapping paper. She raised her glass. "Johnny."
"Selena."
"May a pack of blessings light upon thy back."
"Ah, Shakespeare. Lovely."
Letty watched as he polished off the last 2 ounces of his wine. They sat on the sofa. Fitch opened the scotch and poured them each 2 fingers into heavy tumblers. He put his arm around Letty. She cuddled in close. He went on for a minute about the rarity of this spirit they were about to imbibe. He was drunk, beginning to ramble. She finally sipped the scotch. It was good, better than any whiskey she'd ever tasted, but she hadn't lied. She just wasn't a scotch girl. After a while, he said,
"Everything I've ever done, I've done for my family, Selena. Everything."
Sitting with Fitch on the sofa, it hit her again, that old, familiar enemy. Regret. Guilt. Her conscience. Truth was, she liked Fitch, if for no other reason than he was facing a lifetime behind bars with grace, making the most of his final hours of freedom. She tried to remind herself of all the people Fitch had hurt, and it wasn't like he'd be hanging this painting she was about to steal on the walls of his prison cell. But the arguments rang hollow, insincere. After a while, she felt his head dip toward hers. He was saying something about his family, about how everything had always been for them. His eyes were wet. He didn't sound drunk so much as sleepy. Letty set her glass on the coffee table and eased Fitch's out of his grasp.
"What are you doing?"
he slurred. Letty stood and took him by the hand. She pulled him up off the couch. "Come with me," she whispered.
"My drink."
His eyes were heavy. "You can always finish your drink." She pressed up against him and wrapped her arms around his neck. "Don't you want me, Johnny?" She kissed him with passion this time, open-mouthed and long, hoped it would give him enough of a charge to make it into bed. She led him through the living room. "Where's your room?" she whispered, even though she knew from the blueprints that it was very likely the large master suite on this level. He pointed toward the opening to a hallway just behind the spiral staircase. They stumbled down a wide corridor. The walls were covered with photos of Fitch's family. One in particular caught Letty's eye as she passed by. It had been taken out on the deck of this house, 15, maybe 20 years ago, a much younger Fitch standing with three teenage boys, all shirtless and tanned, Mrs. Fitch in a bathing suit, the sea empty, huge, and glittering behind them. Letty dragged Fitch through the doorway of his bedroom and shut the door behind them. The suite was sprawling. There was a flat-screen television mounted to the wall across from the bed, a bookcase, a small desk where she spotted a laptop, a cell phone, and an empty wine glass. Floor-to-ceiling windows looked out over the dock. French doors opened onto the deck. She couldn't see the moon from here, but she could see its light falling on the sea. "Go lie down," she said. Fitch staggered toward the bed. Letty took her time pulling the curtains. Fitch mumbled,
"You're so beautiful."
"That's what my daddy used to tell me." She could feel the push of adrenaline cutting through her intoxication. "I just need to step into your bathroom for a moment," she said. "I'll be right out. You get comfortable." He said,
"We don't have to do anything unless you want to."
The words came too soft, too muddled. Letty walked into the bathroom. She shut the door, hit the light. It was bigger than most apartments she'd lived in. Leaning over the sink, she studied her pupils in the mirror. They were black and huge. She sat down on the toilet and took a deep breath. All the things she needed to do in the next 45 minutes pressed down on her. She took herself through all the steps, pictured it happening perfectly. 5 minutes passed. She went to the door, pulled it open as softly as she could manage, and slipped back into Fitch's room. The wood-paneled walls now glowed with a soft warmth from candles on the bedside tables. They smelled like vanilla. The hardwood creaked as she crossed to the foot of Fitch's bed. The old man lay on his back with his arms and legs spread out. His shirt was unbuttoned, his pants pulled down to his knees. It was as far as he'd gotten. He snored quietly, his chest rising and falling. He looked tragic. "Bye, Johnny," Letty whispered. Then she moaned several times, full-voiced and throaty, hoping that would keep Fitch's men away from his room for the time being. 10. The bedroom door opened smoothly, without a sound. She moved in bare feet down the corridor. All of the doors she passed were cracked, the rooms dark. Where the hallway opened into the main living area, she stopped. The spiral staircase was straight ahead, but hushed voices crept around a blind corner. It sounded like they were coming from the kitchen.
For a moment, she stood listening. Two men. They were eating, probably picking through the leftovers. Letty went quietly up the staircase, taking the steps two at a time. Near the top, she caught a view down into the kitchen. It was James and some other black-suited man with long hair who she hadn't seen before. They stood at the counter, dipping crackers into the foie gras. She came to the second floor. A long hallway, empty and dark, branched off from either side of the spiral staircase. The blueprints indicated that this level housed four bedrooms, two bathrooms, and a study. Letty kept climbing, using the iron railing as a guide. The noise of the men in the kitchen fell farther and farther away. By the time she reached the final step, she couldn't even hear them. Letty stepped into the cupola of the house. Because three of the walls consisted entirely of windows, the moon poured inside like a floodlight. Letty ripped off the wig. She ran her hands carefully through her hair until her fingers found the razor blade. Padding over to the desk, she turned on the lamp. Her watch read 7:35. She stared up at the wall above the desk. What the hell? She'd been expecting to see the Van Gogh, a skeleton smoking a cigarette. What hung on the wall instead was an acrylic of a horse, maudlin colors, proportions all wrong. She was no art critic, but she felt certain this painting was very badly done. Leaning in close, she read the artist's signature in the bottom right-hand corner of the canvas. Margaret Fitch. Letty sat down in the leather chair behind the desk, her head dizzy and untethered. Had Javier told her the wrong place to look? Had she somehow misunderstood him? No, this was Fitch's office. In fact, there should be a plastic tube taped beneath the desktop. She reached under, groping in the darkness. All she felt was the underside of the middle drawer. Assumptions. Somewhere, she'd made a false one. The blueprints had identified the cupola as an office, but maybe Fitch's was actually down on the second floor. That had to be it. She spun the swivel chair around and started to rise. Took in a hard, fast breath instead. A shadow stood at the top of the spiral staircase, watching her. 11. For a long minute, Letty couldn't move. Her heart banged in her chest like a mental patient in a rubber room.
"Dear old Mom did that one," Fitch said. "God rest her soul."
He pointed to the painting of the horse behind his desk.
"She gave it to me for Christmas 15 years ago. I hated it at the time, and with good reason. Let's be honest, it's hideous. So I kept it in a closet, except for when she visited. Then I'd have to swap out my Van Gogh for that monstrosity, make sure she noticed it proudly displayed in my office.
Johnny.
And then she died, and I got sentimental. I sold Skull with Burning Cigarette and put My Horse Bella on that wall permanently. It's been there for 5 years, and every time I look at it, I think of my mother. I've even come to appreciate certain aspects of it."
Fitch took a step forward into the splay of light emanating from the desk lamp. He looked clear-eyed. He held a large caliber revolver in his right hand, his glass of Macallan in the other.
"There are similarities between you and Van Gogh, Letitia. Both fiery redheads with a nasty predilection for self-injury, suffering from what these psychoanalysts would best describe as daddy issues, and, perhaps most pityingly, both masters of a trade you would never be appreciated for. At least, not in life." "You look confused, Letty."
Fitch smiled.
"Yes, I know your real name. I like it more than your alias, if you want to know the truth, although I did prefer you as a redhead."
He sipped his scotch. "Did you call the police?" she asked. He laughed.
"I'm going to see my fair share of law enforcement for the rest of my life, don't you think? The notion that you'd try to steal from me, come on to my island and steal from me, you brazen girl."
"Johnny..." Letty thought she might be just drunk enough to scare up some real emotion. She had disarmed plenty of men in the past with a few tears.
"Oh, don't cry, Letty."
"I'm sorry, Johnny. I tried to take advantage of you and..."
"No, no, no. I should be the one apologizing to you."
She didn't like the sound of that. Something in the tone of his voice suggesting a piece of knowledge she wasn't privy to.
What are you talking about?
She asked, starting to get up.
No, you just stay right there, please.
She settled back into the chair.
My life, Fitch said, has been so rich, so fragrant. I went to Yale undergrad, Harvard business. I was a Rhodes Scholar, earned a PhD in economics from Stanford. I lived in Europe, the Middle East, Argentina. I rose as fast through the ranks of power tech as anyone in the history of the company.
Fitch edged closer, his hair trembling in the breeze stirred up by a pair of ceiling fans.
By 35, I was the youngest CEO of any global energy company in the world. I had a family I loved, mistresses on 6 continents. I was responsible for 24,000 employees. I brokered multi-billion-dollar deals. Destroyed both domestic and foreign competitors. I've fucked in the Lincoln bedroom under 3 separate presidencies. I've been adored, demonized, admired, copied. I've played hard, made men and ruined men, had the finest of everything. More money than God, more sex than Sinatra. Trust me when I say I go to federal prison for the rest of my life a happy man. If the masses knew how much pure fun it is to have this kind of power and wealth, they'd kill me or themselves.
He walked to one of the windows and stared out across the moonlit sea.
You're a beautiful woman, Letty Dobesh. In another life, who knows? But I didn't allow you to come into my home for sex. I've had plenty of that.
He held up his tumbler.
And I don't really even care about this $40,000 bottle of single malt. On the last night of a man's life, before he reports to prison for a 26-year stint that will likely kill him, he has to ask himself, what do I do with these last precious moments? Do I revisit the things in life that most made me happy, or use this last gasp of freedom to have a truly new experience?
Letty eyed the staircase. If she hadn't been drunk, she could have probably reached the steps before Fitch turned and fired, but he was holding a beast of a gun, a .44 Magnum, or worse. Taking a bullet from something of that caliber would finish her. What does this have to do with me? She asked. Fitch turned and faced her.
Sugar, there's one thing I've never done. I was too old for the draft in 69. I've never been to war, which means I've never had the experience of taking a life.
He'll kill you, she said. Even in prison, he can get to you.
Are you talking about Mr. Estrada?
She nodded.
You don't see it yet, do you?
See what?
It was Javier who put this whole thing together, Letty. There was never any painting. No drug in your breath freshener spray. I told him about this last experience I wanted to have before I went away, and for a very significant price, he brought you to me.
Letty felt a surge of hot bile lurch out of her stomach, anger and fear. She fought it back down. Johnny?
What? You going to beg me not to do this? Try to test the limits of my conscience? Good luck with that.
It won't be how you think. It's not some great rush.
See, you don't understand me. I have no expectations of feeling one way or another. I just want to have done it. What's a richly lived life that has never caused death? You ever kill someone, Letty?
Yes.
How was it?
Self-defense.
Kill or be killed?
She nodded.
Well, how was it?
I think about it every day.
Exactly. Because you had a true experience, and that's all I want. This is how it'll work. I'm going to wait right here for 5 minutes, give you a head start. See, I don't just want to kill you, Letty. I want to hunt you.
You're as evil as they say.
This is not about good and evil. I've lived dangerously all of my life. I want to continue to do so on this final night when it counts the most. My security team is on their way down the dock as we speak. They're going to anchor my speedboat 1/4 mile out. My yacht is staying in the marina in Key West for the night. It'll just be you and me on the island. I know you can't swim, Letty. That was one of the requirements that, unfortunately for you, landed you this job. So there are no ways off this little island.
I have a son,
she said.
Haven't we covered that already?
Johnny, please. Letty stood up slowly and moved forward with her arms outstretched, hands open.
Has it occurred to you, you aren't thinking clearly, that you have all this emotion swarming around inside of you and...
Fitch pointed the revolver at her face and thumbed back the hammer.
That's close enough.
It wasn't the first or the second or even the third time she'd had a firearm pointed at her, but she never got used to that gaping black hole, couldn't take her eyes off of it. If Fitch chose to pull the trigger in this moment, it was the last thing she'd ever see.
You destroyed thousands of lives, she said. But you aren't a murderer, Johnny.
You're right. Not yet. Now you have 4 minutes.
12. Letty raced down the spiral staircase, drunk, terrified, still trying to wrap her head around what had just happened. Only one conclusion. Javier had played her, sold her out. She passed the second floor and ran down the remaining steps into the living room, straight to the cordless phone on a bookshelf constructed from pieces of driftwood. She grabbed the handset off its base, punched talk. Fitch was already on the other end of the line.
I'm afraid that's not going to work, Letty. 3 minutes, 30 seconds. 29, 28.
I need a weapon. She dropped the phone and turned the corner into the kitchen, started yanking drawers open. As she pulled open a third, she saw it lying on a butcher block cutting board next to a pile of onion and garlic skin, a chef's knife with a stainless steel handle and an 8-inch blade. For 10 seconds, she stood in the remnants of Angie's cooking, trying to process her next move. So much fear coursing through her, she felt paralyzed. There were dishes everywhere, a tart cooling on the granite beside the oven, water dripping from the faucet. Fitch expected her to run, expected to chase her across the island. So should she stay in the house, hide in a bedroom on the second floor and let him wander around outside in vain? Decide. You can't just keep standing here. Grabbing the knife, she bolted across the room into the foyer, jerked open the front door, slammed it shut after her. She shot down the steps, wondering which way to go. The shore seemed like a bad idea. She headed into the interior of the island, staying off the path, fighting through undergrowth. Gnarled branches clawed at her arms, ripped tears in her Chanel dress. Her bare feet crunched leaves and tracked through patches of dirt. She'd barely made it 50 yards when a blinding pain seared the sole of her right foot. Letty went down with the knife, clutching her foot. In the moonlight that filtered through the leaves, she studied the damage. The underside of her foot had been starred with a dozen sand spurs. She began pulling them out one at a time, wincing, wondering how many minutes she had left. Less than two? Less than one? The sound of the front door creaking open on its salt-rusted hinges answered her question. She looked up. All she could see was the top half of Fitch standing on the deck. When he reached back to shut the door, she noticed that he wore a strange-looking hat. He lowered out of view, the steps groaning as he descended. Letty dug the last few spurs out of her foot. She could hear Fitch approaching, footsteps and heavy breathing. She didn't move. Figured Fitch had to be walking up the path. It didn't sound like he was thrashing through undergrowth. Letty inched back farther from the shadow of the scrub oak, tucked her chin into her knees and tried to make herself as small as possible. Fitch passed within 20 feet. She crouched there, listening, until his footfalls could no longer be heard. Letty crawled out from under the oak and came to her feet. Total silence. The stars shining, the moon still climbing in the sky. She knew what the shore on the dockside of the island was like from that sunset stroll, a narrow strip of beach lined with vegetation, no place to hide. She moved slowly through the scrub oak, taking care that her shoulders didn't brush against the branches. She crested the midpoint. The island sloped gently down to the opposite shore. This side struck her as more wild. There was no beach, just mangroves all the way down to the water. She squeezed her way through the slim trunks. The mangroves grew more densely clustered as she neared the shore. Letty crawled on hands and knees now, the foliage above her head so thick it blotted out the sky, only splotches of moonlight scattered across the ground. She went on until the trees were too close to go any farther. They boxed her in like prison bars.
Lying on the ground, her body twisted between the mangroves, she finally breathed deep and slow. The temperature hovered in the upper 60s, but she shivered, covered in sweat. Her dress had been shredded climbing through the mangroves. It hung from her shoulders in tatters. She felt good about this spot. Considering it was night, she was all but invisible, and Fitch would have a hell of a time reaching her. She couldn't imagine the old man, who had at least 10 inches on her, fitting through this grove of tightly packed trees. How big had he said this island was? 14 acres? Best case scenario, she could hole up here for the night. Fitch had to report to prison tomorrow. If she could survive until then... Letty glanced at her watch. The tips of the hour and minute hands glowed in the dark. 8:15. She should have met Javier at the east end of the island with $15 million in a plastic tube. This should have been the most exhilarating, life-changing score of her life. Instead, she was being hunted down like a dog, because she'd put her faith in a psychopath, because, again, her judgment had failed. Something niggled her, a seemingly small fact she was overlooking. A rodent scurried through some leaves nearby. A mosquito whined in her ear. What was it? No flashlight. That was it. Fitch hadn't brought a flashlight outside with him. When she'd glimpsed him walking down the steps, she'd expected to see a light wink on. But it never did. And then he'd just strolled up that path in the dark like... Her breath caught in her chest. Like he could see. She sat up. That wasn't a strange-looking hat he'd been wearing. Those were night-vision goggles. 30, 40 yards away, impossible to know for sure, Letty heard branches rustling. It was the sound of something big coming her way through the underbrush. Get out of here now. Letty started pushing her way through the labyrinth of mangroves. By the time she broke free onto higher ground, her little black dress dangled by a thread. An oak branch beside her face snapped off. The gunshot followed a microsecond later, a boom like a clap of thunder. And she was running, arms pumping, gasping, driven by pure instinct. She ducked to miss an overhanging branch, but another one caught her across the forehead. Blood poured down into her face. She didn't stop. There were lights in the distance. The house. She veered toward it. At least inside, Fitch wouldn't have the sight advantage he held right now. Letty came out of the scrub oak and onto the dirt path that cut down the middle of the island. For 3 seconds, she paused. Hadn't had this much physical exertion in months. Her lungs screamed. She could hear Fitch closing in. Letty opened up into a full sprint as she approached the house. She reached the stairs, grabbed the railing. 3 steps up, she stopped. Maybe it was a premonition. Maybe it was just a feeling. Something whispered in her ear, "You go in that house, you won't ever come out alive." She backed down the steps and stared into the darkness under the stairs, thinking, where is the last place in the world he would expect someone to hide who can't swim? Her eyes fell upon the snorkel set hanging from a nail driven into the concrete. She grabbed the snorkel and mask and took off running toward the east end of the island, the only side of it she hadn't seen. She shot back into the scrub oak. Glancing over her shoulder, she spotted Fitch coming into the illumination of the floodlights mounted to the deck. He pulled off the goggles to pass through the light, held them in one hand, that giant revolver in the other, a big, sloppy grin spreading across his face like a kid playing cowboys and Indians. Another 50 yards through the oak, and then Letty was standing on the shore in her strapless bra and panties. Her Chanel had been ripped off completely. The water looked oil black. She could hear Fitch coming. She wondered how much time she had, wanting to do anything but wade out into the sea. 13. Letty dropped the knife on the shore, pulled on the mask, and stepped into the water. It was cool, just south of 75 degrees and shallow. She took invisible steps, no idea if the next would plunge her in over her head or shred her feet on coral. By the time she'd gone 30 feet out from the shore, the water came to her knees. At 50 feet, it reached her waist. She stopped, couldn't force herself to take another step, hated the feel of it all around her, enclosing her, reminded her in so many ways of death. Fitch stumbled out of the oak onto the beach. He stood profiled in the moonlight. He was looking all around as Letty jammed the snorkel into her mouth and slowly lowered herself into the sea, struggling not to make a splash or a ripple. The water rose above her chest, then her neck, up the sides of her face,
Daddy, please. She could breathe, but still she felt as though she were drowning. No sound underwater but her own hyperventilation as she sucked oxygen down the tube at a frantic pace. Her knees touched the sandy bottom of the ocean floor. The claustrophobia was unbearable. Even with her eyes wide open, she couldn't see a thing. Lifting her right arm, she fingered the top of the snorkel. It stuck 2 inches out of the water. She pushed with her knees, rose up slowly until the top half of the mask peaked above the surface. Fitch still stood on the shore, staring in her direction. She dipped back under. It was unbearable. 9 years old. The cool and the dark of it. By herself at night in the single wide trailer she shares with her father. He comes home from the bars, drunk and angry and alone. He loves to take hot baths when he's drunk, but Letty has beaten him to it. He finds her soaking. With their water heater on its last leg, it will take 2 hours to heat enough for another bath. In a rage, he shatters the fluorescent bulb over the sink and locks her inside. Tells her through the door if she gets out of that bath before he says she can, he'll drown her in it. It's winter time. 4 hours later, the water is cold and the air temperature in the bathroom even colder. Letty sits with her knees drawn into her chest, shivering uncontrollably. She's crying, calling for her father to let her out, pleading with him for forgiveness. Toward dawn, he kicks the door in. From the smell of him, he's somehow drunker than before. She says, "Daddy, please." It happens so fast, she doesn't even see him move. 1 minute she's shivering and staring up at him, the next he's holding her head under the frigid bathwater, telling her what a bad girl she is to make him so angry. He's beaten her before. He's come after her with a broken beer bottle, with his belt, with his fists, with other things. But she has never believed she was going to die. Because there was no warning, she didn't have a chance to take in a full breath of air. Already bright spots are blooming behind her eyes, and she's struggling, kicking, wasting precious oxygen. But his boot heel presses down hard against her back, pinning her to the fiberglass. He holds her head down with 2 hands. Even drunk, he has the strength of an ox. The build of a diesel mechanic. She is no match, every second passing so slowly, panic setting in, thinking, he's going to kill me. He is really going to kill me this time. The fear and the horror meet in a single desperate need. Breathe, breathe, breathe. She can't help it, can't resist the pure burning desire. She takes a desperate breath just as her father jerks her head out of the water by her hair.
"Think you've learned a lesson?"
he growls. She nods, apologizing as she bawls hysterically out of the only emotion her father has ever caused in her, fear. There are other nights like this, a handful of them or worse. She will never learn to swim, will always fear the cold, dark water, will never understand, despite 1,000 sleepless nights, why her own father hated her. And like that 9-year-old girl, a part of her still believed it was her fault, some flaw in her emotional chemistry, and nothing she could do, no amount of logic, no quantity of love from anyone, would ever make her stop believing it. Letty came up suddenly out of the ocean. If Fitch saw her and shot her, so be it, but she couldn't stand another second underwater. He was gone. She spit out the snorkel's mouthpiece, took several careful steps toward the shore until the water level had dropped to her thighs. She stared down the north and south beaches, too dark to see much of anything. Backing away, she settled down into the water until only her head was above the surface. Waited. 5 minutes slipped by. 20. It was beyond quiet. She watched the moon on its arcing path over the island. So thirsty, her head pounding from the booze. After a long time, she heard footsteps crunching in the sand. Letty backed into deeper water and lowered herself once more until only her eyes were exposed. Fitch trudged up the north beach and arrived at the end of the island. He stopped and waited, listening. Letty forced herself back under. When she came up a minute later, Fitch had started down the south side of the island. "Fitch has to report to prison tomorrow. If I can survive until then..." She returned to that comforting thought she'd had in the mangroves, the idea that if she survived until tomorrow, until Fitch was gone, she would be in the clear. "Is this another assumption that's going to get me killed?" Fitch's security detail had played a part in this.
Exactly how much they knew was uncertain, but they were culpable. Fitch's life would be over tomorrow, but theirs would carry on. If the old man didn't close the deal, could she really expect his force of ex-military contractors to leave this loose thread dangling? Another impulse of fear swept through her. A new realization setting in. Hiding all night from Fitch might not be enough to save her life. 14. Letty stood up and walked out of the sea, the taste of salt water on her tongue. When she reached the shore, she pulled off the mask and dropped it and the snorkel in the sand. She picked up the knife, headed quickly down the south beach. The fear fell away, anger rushing in to fill the void. She could see Fitch in the distance, his white shirt bright as day in the moonlight. He walked 60 yards ahead, and she was gaining on him, keeping close to the trees that lined the beach in case Fitch suddenly spun around. Her footfalls in the soft white sand were soundless. She picked up her pace, moving now at a full run, the wind blowing her skin dry. The faster she ran, the angrier she got, the less afraid she felt. Fitch was almost to the dock, Letty only 20 yards back from him now. Her legs ached from the full-on sprint, her lungs burned, tears streamed out of the corners of her eyes. She knew exactly what had triggered it, being down under that cool December water. How could she not think of Daddy? Dead 20 years and yet still with her, always with her. She'd heard somewhere that every person reaches a certain age and, though they keep getting older, they never feel any older. In so many ways, she was still that 9-year-old girl shivering in cold bathwater. In prison, she'd sat through enough AA and NA meetings to know the drill, the propaganda. Admit a lack of control. Acknowledge a higher power. Make amends. Embrace forgiveness. That was all fine and good, but at the end of the day, the 9-year-old trapped in this woman's body couldn't care less about 12 steps. Her world was imbalanced in the worst possible way. She'd had a monster for a father. If she lived to be 100, she would never get past it. Up ahead, Fitch stepped across the dock. Letty slowed from a sprint to a jog, trying to mask her accelerated breathing. She leapt over the sand-blasted planks, took the final step slow and careful. Fitch held the revolver in his right hand. His gait looked tired, like an old man's. Letty tightened her grip on the knife and pushed the point of the blade into his back. Fitch took a sudden breath and quit walking. She said, "I'll shove it through to your stomach. Drop the gun, I swear to God." He still held the gun. Letty leaned her weight into the blade, and as it started to penetrate, the revolver hit the sand. She lunged down for the gun and let go of the knife as she swiped it up, stumbled back away from Fitch. The revolver was a giant thing, must have weighed 4 or 5 pounds. It was nickel-plated and over a foot long, with Raging Bull engraved down the side of the barrel. Letty had to struggle to keep it leveled on Fitch's chest. "You just stay right there," Letty said, backing another foot away. 4 cartridges remained in the cylinder.
"You lost your lovely dress," Fitch said.
"Get down on your knees." Fitch carefully lowered himself into the sand.
"That's a big gun for a little girl. Packs a hell of a kick."
It took 2 fingers to pull the hammer back.
"Wasn't personal,"
Fitch said, the pitch of his voice kicking up a few degrees.
"I hope you understand that. You are a formidable little girl, a scrapper. In another life, I'd have you come work for me."
"Why is that all I ever hear anytime somebody does me wrong? Nothing's ever personal anymore. All those people you ripped off, that wasn't personal either, was it? Just business, right?"
"Letty."
"No, you've explained yourself plenty. Your men are offshore in boats?"
"Yes."
"Are there any other boats on the island?"
"No."
"Do you have your cell phone with you?"
"No."
"We're going to the house."
"Why?"
"Get up, start walking."
"Calling the police would be a very bad idea, Letty."
"Get up." Slowly, Fitch stood. "Now walk over to the dock," she said, "and do it slowly with your hands raised." But Fitch didn't move. He just stared at her.
"Do you think I'll tell you again?" she asked.
"I knew. I knew it all along, from the minute I met you. This would be one hell of a night, Letitia. Rare to feel I've met my match."
He let slip a long, tired breath.
like he'd come to the end of something, and sprang at Letty. It was the loudest gunshot she had ever heard, with a kick like a shotgun. Fitch sat in the sand, his mouth dropped open. He made a sucking sound, as if trying to draw breath. The hole in the dead center of his chest was massive. Letty was shaking. Fitch fell back onto the beach and stared up at the stars. There was so much blood, she knew he was going to die. Out on the water, a motor growled to life. Letty turned around. She looked down the dock and out to sea. A single spotlight glided toward her, the motor getting louder as it approached. Soon she could see the profile of the speedboat. It was seconds away from reaching the end of the dock. 15. Letty sprinted inland. Already she could hear men's voices behind her, shouting her name, her real name, ordering her to stop as their shoes pounded against the planks. She tore up the steps onto the deck and shouldered through the front door. After several hours in the dark, the onslaught of light made her eyes water. Letty barged into the living area and rushed to the cordless phone. It was still lying on the floor where she'd dropped it. She grabbed it, hit talk, held it to her ear. Beep, 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 beep. She raced down the hallway into Fitch's bedroom, slammed the door after her, locked it, flipped the lights. Thank God. There it was, lying on the desk. She picked up Fitch's cell phone, praying it still held a charge. Outside, she could hear numerous sets of footsteps hammering up the stairs, men screaming her name. They charged into the house. Hide. Letty crossed the hardwood floor to the French doors. Someone was coming down the hall. She turned the handle. Locked. The knob on the other door rattled, someone trying to get in. She was out of time. Nothing left to do but fight. Three bullets versus three or four men. She thought, this may be how it ends for you. Are you ready? The door splintered, a man kicking it in from the other side. She aimed the revolver at the bedroom door. After two more kicks, it burst open, and the muscled girth of James filled the doorway. His cheeks were flushed from running. With one arm, Letty trained the raging bull on his substantial center mass. In her other hand, she gripped the cell phone. Her thumb keyed in 911. James held a black pistol at his side. At least for the moment, he was smart enough to keep it there. Someone on the second floor yelled his name.
Down here,
he shouted back. You got her?
Sort of.
Letty moved her thumb toward the call button. As the other men came running, James said,
Who you calling?
911.
Why don't we talk about that, okay?
Letty's right biceps had begun to cramp from holding the raging bull with one arm. She could hear the other men in the hallway now. James yelled over his shoulder,
Everybody stay back!
What exactly do we have to talk about? She asked.
How dialing that number is going to get you killed.
Way I figure, I'm dead either way.
That's not true, but if you involve the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, we're going to have a problem. Why don't you put that gun down? I'll do the same, and we'll talk.
I'm not putting anything down. You people tried to kill me.
What if I were to guarantee your safety?
I'd call bullshit.
You put the gun down, I'll get you some clothes, and I'll have you back on Key West within the hour.
You must think I'm really stupid.
No, ma'am.
He shook his head.
This can work out for everyone. Of course, you'd have to do a few things for me.
Like?
Like never mention any of this to anybody. Ever.
What about that famous dead man on the beach? Aren't some people expecting him tomorrow?
We can damage control the mess you made of Mr. Fitch.
The mess I made?
It's you I'm worried about.
Over James's shoulder, Letty spotted a man creeping into view. Your buddy right behind you is about to get shot, James.
Go sit in the living room,
he yelled.
All of you!
James, right now, Scott.
She heard them falling back. James looked at her.
Better?
For some reason, I don't think you'd be so interested in talking to me if I didn't have this big goddamn hand cannon pointed at your chest.
Now that's just not true. You put it down and see.
I don't think so. Tell me again how you're planning to damage control your boss.
If all goes well,
James said,
if you and me don't have a big shootout, you'll see some breaking news tomorrow morning. Go something like this. Convicted CEO of PowerTech found dead on his private beach. He took his own life the night before he was scheduled to report to prison. There will even be a suicide note.
Oh, you can fake his handwriting too?
No, he already wrote it.
Letty didn't want to, but her strength was failing. She set the cell phone on the floor at her feet and took a two-handed grip on the revolver.
Asking yourself why he might have done such a thing?
James asked.
Regardless of what you may think of him, Fitch is a brilliant man. He saw this as a possible outcome of what he had planned for tonight. He didn't want anyone to take the fall, not me or the other guys, and not even you, the woman who killed him.
Prince of a man. James patted his lapel pocket.
I've got his note right here.
That's a pretty story, Letty said, and you're a world-class con man.
Call my bluff. Put that gun away and see. I've got a lot of work to do before the sun comes up.
I'm thinking if I put this gun down, you'll do one of two things. Shoot me straight away and bury me on this island, or take me out into some deep water. Dispose of me there.
I can certainly understand you thinking the worst, all things considered.
So then how can you honestly believe I'd ever put this gun down with you still breathing?
Because when you think it through, you'll see there's no other way. Maybe I'm lying. You've got 3 rounds left in that Taurus. You'd kill me, no doubt. If you got really lucky, you might kill one of my other men. But the third, and the fourth, they'd take you down. And you know this. The thing is, if you shoot me, you'll never find out if I'm lying or telling the truth, 'cause you'll be dead. In fact, I don't want to alarm you. I don't want you to make any sudden moves. But there's a man standing on the deck right behind you. He's pointing a .357 at your head through one of the panes of glass, and he could have fired 60 seconds ago.
Letty exhaled a long, slow breath. She hadn't heard any footsteps on the other side of the French doors. It was a smart play on James's part. Get her to turn her head, distract her just long enough to raise his weapon and fire. James was smiling now, Letty's palm sweating so badly the grip of the revolver was dripping.
So what do you say, Letty? Doesn't some part of you want to know if I'm actually this good of a liar?
Not really. She squeezed back the hammer. The moment her finger touched the trigger, there was the sound of wood splintering and glass breaking behind her. The gun fired as someone crashed into her back with devastating force. She went down hard, crushed under the weight of a man with foie gras on his breath. Footsteps raced down the hallway, the other men pouring into Fitch's bedroom. She struggled, but it was no use. He had her pinned to the hardwood floor, and the gun lay just out of reach. The man on top of her said,
"James, you hit?" "Just a graze across my shoulder. Damn if that wasn't close, though."
Letty's eyes welled up as she